Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 127 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, as always, great to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
So I figured maybe what we'll start off talking about today is regulation. And we've talked about regulation being a big theme of 2024. And the big thing that is right around the corner is the spot Ethereum ETF is now expected, I think, the week of next week, July 15th. So Bitwise just submitted their S1, and now it sounds like we're just waiting on the SEC. Shocker.
Yeah, I saw just a quick thing on that, that some S1s were rolling in and, you know, like 0% fees. I mean, like all the same players that played in the spot Bitcoin ETF are doing the same thing for the Ethereum ETF. And we'll see what the investors do, if they do the same thing they did for the Bitcoin ETF, or if they kind of choke back a little bit because Ethereum's a little bit of a different sell.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about some of the fees that Ethereum's generating later, because I think that's kind of interesting. But from a regulation perspective, the other thing that was kind of cool was that the House is now looking at revoting on SAB 121. It's going to take two-thirds of the House to override the veto that Biden did. But since the House is planning to look at it again, I mean, that is definitely a positive. And with all the craziness that's happened around Biden in the past week, maybe that's going to change some people's perspective on if he was making the right decision or not.
Yeah, I mean, there were quite a few Democrats that came across the aisle on that in both the House and the Senate. And that was prior to them shaking everything up and being like, man, we need somebody else to run. Biden needs to step down. Like, you know, Biden basically told him, I'm going to veto it if you pass it. And, you know, get a handful of guys jumping across anyway. Now, if he's kind of a lame duck, maybe you get a little bit more, and because people are going to be more worried about themselves than the party. But I don't know. Blue team usually sticks together on stuff. So we'll see. I think, what are we in now? We're in July. So between now and in January, I just don't anticipate a whole lot of things happening.
I guess it was interesting. So Polymarket kind of came out and had some new percentages of what was going to happen. So right now, Harris is at a 49% probability of being the Democratic nominee. So Biden's at 38%. He has a 73% chance of stepping down and 11% chance of winning. Now, granted, all these are people that are involved in crypto, so maybe they're a little biased, but those are kind of some crazy numbers. And what's also interesting is there's like 60 countries around the world this year that are voting on elections. And so far, the only really major party that's talking about crypto has been the Republican side of the U.S. Hardly any other country is talking about crypto. So when people ask if this is early, if you're early or not, it's still early. It's barely being talked about. I mean, I know we're saying Congress is looking at stuff, but it's still not even one of the main issues on a lot of these parties.
Yeah, I mean, I sat and watched the entire debate between Biden and Trump, looking for them to talk about Bitcoin or looking for one of them to just fall asleep. And I'd got neither one of those things. I mean, if in an hour and a half, it's not Bitcoin and crypto isn't big enough to even mention, you know, and it's not like the moderators would have to ask the question, but you could just having a candidate rattle off the decisions that the other guy makes. Trump could have been throwing that against Biden for lack of innovation and sending jobs elsewhere. And Biden could have said it in regards to, you know, the dollar as a powerful resource for the United States. And, you know, neither one of them said anything. So yeah, we're early. Like I listen to a lot of Bitcoin stuff, and, you know, we're in this price dip, still over $1 trillion market cap. You know, mid-$50,000 Bitcoin is not a disaster. And it's not even talked about in any major way. I think if we can hit that hyperbolic price, like price just drives conversations. And so if we can do that, if the cycle holds and we do the same thing we've done before, and by fall, we're seeing new all-time highs and things are getting a little crazy, then I would think they talk about it a little bit. But it just, I try not to be biased. And then I'm like, I bet they're going to talk about Bitcoin in this debate. And I'm like, of course they didn't talk about Bitcoin in this debate after it was over. So yeah, it's definitely early.
Yeah. So I guess a couple of things. One, we talked about Twitter and Solana, and Twitter enabling Solana, or X enabling Solana payments right through their platform. Multicoin has kind of come out and said they will match up to $1 million from anybody that uses that platform to donate. And the whole point of these donations is to fund pro crypto candidates as well. So it's becoming very commonplace for a lot of companies to be investing in candidates that are going to be more pro crypto, to just do what needs to happen in order for innovation to continue to happen. And then the second thing, you're talking about Bitcoin and the price, and what's crazy is the fear and greed is now down to 29, which last time it was at 29, it was, Bitcoin was about $17,000 in like January of 23. So right now we're more than 3x that price, right? And we're back down to where the fear and greed is. So it did a pretty good job from 17K going up before. Hopefully it does something like that again. And whether it triples or does something more or less, that would be fantastic, right? So hopefully we'll see something positive. I think one of the crazy pieces of what's happening with Bitcoin is most of the short-term holders having held between like 3 and 6 months have been some of the biggest sellers. I think they sold like almost $2.5 billion here recently. So just couldn't take the volatility. And for those of us that have been in this game, it's kind of funny. And we were talking about this earlier before we got on, that all this volatility is like, okay, time to go buy some more.
Yep. I mean, I did not expect to buy more Bitcoin, but a couple things going on my side. And I'm like, okay, well, what do I want to buy? Stocks don't seem right. Real estate, no thanks. Definitely not bonds. And so I'm like, well, Bitcoin's in fear, and the price is down relative to, you know, I already know people pay $75,000 for a Bitcoin, and I can get some for in the 50s. So I allocated more into Bitcoin. Like, I just don't know what else to buy that has the upside and the lack of downside, because I mean, I've seen some bearish projections of like, we could get to 45,000, you know, we could dip all the way down to 45,000. I'm like, that's not so bad. Like, if that's kind of like the worst case scenario is 45, like that is not where I expect it to stay. So if you're buying it in the mid 50s and it looks like from a technical analysis or whatever the reason for the $45,000 forecast in what is effectively a bull market dip. Yeah, I mean, I'm only buying at a 20% premium over the forecasted bottom of the bottoms. Now, granted, I mean, stuff could go wrong and we could, you know, Bitcoin price could do whatever. It can go as low as, and went to 16.5 a couple years ago. I didn't expect it to go that low. So I don't know how, you know, what the price will do, but you know, when everybody else is afraid, I don't mind buying.
It's usually been the good time to buy. So if you look at the options data, I think it shows that 51,500 is more likely than 65,800 from a short-term perspective, but long-term, everything's pointing into that $120,000 range. So it's kind of to your point, right? Yes, you could miss out a little bit on the bottom or where the bottom's going to be, but I think long-term, it's still got a good chance of 2 or 3Xing here in the next year.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to my options are, I have some money making 5% in a money market fund based on the Fed funds rate, or I have some more Bitcoin that has a tremendous upside. And, oh, by the way, if they drop the interest rate, then stocks go up, and that's nice. But my, you know, I mean, instead of, if Bitcoin goes way up and I'm sitting on, instead of 5%, now I'm making 3.5 or whatever. It's like, yeah, that's not a long-term solution. Like I need to be in that account long enough to find something to buy that is on sale. And if Bitcoin goes from 73,000 to 55,000, that's kind of on sale.
Yeah. So some other regulation news that I saw that was kind of interesting. Zambia has come out and said anyone any other citizens that use U.S. dollars or other foreign currencies can be jailed for up to 10 years. They're trying to get rid of it, all the usage of U.S. dollar, and have their own dollar used. And it doesn't really say crypto is part of that, but it wouldn't surprise me if they do try to do something like that. But that's still, to me, crazy. Kind of going back to this, I mean, one of the concepts of Bitcoin is having freedom, right? And if you're going to be required to use some sort of dollar that is losing value compared to other assets, that's not exactly your decision if you're being forced to do that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about Zambia, but if it's doing as well as a lot of the other countries and their currencies, that's probably not going great. And if they're having to put in rules like don't use other means of money, that's probably not great for the Zambia local currency. So, you know, governments aren't really looking out for their people, and they're looking out for themselves. So I think if the United States started making weird rules about stuff like that, it would be like, yeah, it's all the more reason to hold some Bitcoin in cold storage.
So Taiwan also had some announcements that they are planning to present their CDBC research report to Parliament. I think it's next week, which they've been working on for about 5 years, since like 2019. And their plan is to hold multiple hearings and forums in 2025 to talk about what to do next with that. So I know there's a lot of people in the U.S. that don't want that, but the rest of the world, there's probably some version of that that's coming one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, as much as everybody talks about it, like, why do we need this? It's only that, you know, helping the surveillance state. Every country seems to be pushing forward. I mean, there's just too much smoke. You know, somebody's gonna come out with one, and I think other governments are gonna like it, and other people with their head on straight are not gonna not like it, and I think there'll be a bit of a battle in that. In a few countries, it seems like Australia would be one of the first to adopt it because they've gone off the deep end. Like as soon as COVID happened, they're like, all right, we give up, bring on the authoritarian government. So there's probably a handful of countries that'll jump in.
Argentina seems to be kind of doing their own thing here lately. So their president just announced that they're going to do zero currency issuance and that they're fine with competing currencies like Bitcoin. And they're also planning to eliminate the 30% surcharge for foreign transactions that they currently have. So their goal is to become kind of the freest country in the world. And I think this is a good step forward. I mean, they seem to be copying what Ireland did back in its day to go from countries that nobody wants to be a part of to now most businesses have some sort of residence in Ireland because of the tax advantages.
Yeah, Argentina's got a lot of advantages. If they straighten up the government and get rid of all of their anti-freedom, pro-leftist mentality, they're poised to make a bounce back, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So if he can actually do it, and it seems like he's doing it, but this is a real Band-Aid rip-off approach. But you kind of have to, because you only got a handful of years before the elections do up, and that stuff's going to take a while to filter down and kind of see results. But yeah, I mean, I say go for it. It's easy for me to say. I'm not in Argentina and like going to live through the roughness of this like uncertainty period. But it's better if more people are in countries that have more freedom. That's better for everybody. So yeah, go for it.
So speaking of countries almost without freedom lately, because they seem to be going the wrong way, Nigeria is back in the news. They just added a 7.5% VAT tax on any transaction with KuCoin for their citizens. So, which is kind of crazy to me. And I think when you talk about Nigeria, it's also good to get an update on the Binance executive, Dewan. So he's been in the hospital in Nigeria for a month, and everybody is saying he's not doing well with malaria and everything. But Nigeria is saying, oh, he's fine. We're doing everything we need to do. He's good here. So I can't believe I'm laughing at this, but it's like, is this seriously even a conversation that we're having, and our government isn't really doing anything about it for a U.S. citizen? So it's kind of frustrating, but if you don't laugh, you'll probably cry about it.
Yeah, well, one, it's interesting that KuCoin still exists, because I feel like I got opened a KuCoin account 6 years ago to buy some random thing. And I'm pretty sure it's unattainable in the United States these days. At one point I was like, you know what? I need to go back and check stuff. And I try to log in. It's like, no, you're from the United States. You're done. Like, sorry. So that's a wrap, but interesting that KuCoin still operates. And yeah, I mean, this Nigerian hostage situation for the Binance guy is going on longer than I expected it to. I feel like we're approaching like Brittany Griner level of number of days in country.
So I think to me, KuCoin is one of the better exchanges out there. It's just not accessible to the US anymore. So KuCoin and Binance were two great exchanges that the SEC has decided that we're not allowed to touch, unfortunately, but it is what it is. German government also has been in the news here lately with the Bitcoin price crashing. They have sold a little over $800 million of Bitcoin, which leaves them about $2.3 billion left. It's funny, Justin Sun has offered to buy $2 billion of it to take it off of the market. I don't think they've responded to that yet. But it's kind of crazy because you have some of the government officials from Germany saying, we should quit selling. We should be using this as a reserve asset. It'll help promote innovation and entrepreneurship within Germany. Why are we doing this? And I mean, if you look at it, Germany had, I think at one point, maybe the third most Bitcoin in the world from a reserve currency from a country. So the US had about 12 billion. UK was at 3.3. Germany at one point was at about 3. And then if you compare El Salvador, they're about 314 million. They're a long ways away, but they're the ones that keep buying. Everybody else is selling.
Yeah, I did see like there was some discussion on the German side about like maybe we should not sell anymore. Like not because of what it was doing to the Bitcoin market, but because of what it could do for Germany in the future. I don't understand why they don't. Like the United States is actually doing like maybe an accidental good job of not selling the Bitcoin they've confiscated, because I don't know if they're doing it on purpose or if they just can't pass enough pieces of paper back and forth to actually do something. But yeah, I mean, if I was a country and I found myself with a substantial amount of Bitcoin, I don't think I would sell it. If you're not in the States, definitely not, because all you need to do is just print more dollars. Why would you sell Bitcoin to make US dollars that you can just print yourself? And so Germany would be a little bit different because they don't have that kind of control over the euro, but still, I mean, they print more euros. So I don't know why they would do that. But there's got to be enough people that have at least an inkling of like, hey, I've been hearing about Bitcoin for 14 years. It hasn't gone away. We have some. Why are we getting rid of it?
Yeah, we have a lot compared to a lot of other people, right? So why not be one of the leaders from country perspective, right? So, but apparently that's not the case right now.
No, it doesn't make sense to me. The way governments operate makes less and less sense to me.
Yeah. So Justin Sun has also been in the news, I feel like, a lot this week. I don't know if Tron has been getting him in the news or what, but they have announced... Tron / Justin Sun have announced that they plan to offer gas-free stablecoins on the Tron network by the end of this year, which is intriguing. We've talked about stablecoins as being one of those reasons why you could see a lot of people move into crypto, and they did not explain how they're going to do it, so we're not really sure how that's going to happen, but they did say that at some point when it's done on Tron, they're hoping it can migrate to Ethereum and other EVM compatible blockchains as well. So I think it's exciting to see because gas fees can be a lot, but we'll see what actually does happen here when they release it at the end of this year.
Yeah, this is getting dangerously close to get 20% yield on your crypto by storing it here, because Tron's already the cheapest. I mean, that's why they have a ton of transactions in stablecoins when you compare them to everybody else, especially when you consider like nobody knows about the Tron network, but and works is a good combination. Like you can be cheap and not work, and that's not a successful thing to do. And you can be expensive and work, and then the countries that don't have a lot of discretionary income and people in those countries aren't going to use you. So Tron has like a pretty strong stablecoin market share. And but going to a zero gas, I you got to make money, man. And it just makes me nervous to be like, oh, instead of charging gas fees, we're going to invest this in appreciating assets. And like, that, okay, well, that's all great until those appreciating assets depreciate. And now you're upside down and we're in FTX world again, or Luna, Terra Luna stuff. So I'm not a fan of telling me that there's a free lunch. So I'd rather you tell me, yeah, we're going to charge 0.01% on transactions. It'll be like, oh man, that's really cheap. But at least you have enough money. Like, you're playing the volume game, and you're going to end up with enough money to run your company.
Yeah. So I know I've used Tron in the past, and if you lock up a certain amount, it gives you so much power, or whatever they want to call it, which to me is kind of a similar version of using gas to make transactions. So I'm sure there's going to be a caveat. Like you said, nothing ever comes for free. I think even Ethereum has a new EIP. I don't remember the number, but it's one of those things that is going to allow the other end to actually pay for the gas. So, I mean, right now, for most people, understanding how gas works and how to make it happen, like if you have Ethereum tokens into a wallet, you need to have Ethereum in there to pay for the gas. If you can do what Coinbase wallet and a few others are doing, where you can have these gasless transactions and doing things in the background, Ethereum is supposed to be working on something that will allow that infrastructure piece to pay for it and almost have it priced in already. So we'll see what happens with that. I mean, to me, it's still a little bit over my head and how they're going to do that, but it will be amazing for that to happen and for this whole Web3 concept to look more like a Web2 concept and make it easy for everybody to understand.
Yeah. No, I mean, it would be great if they could figure out a way to do that. I feel like right now you have two options. You can either pay a fee or you can get something for free and have it catastrophically fail. So those are the options that I see right now. So I think like a little, even like a half percent, like Strike, right? Like Jack Mallers wants to have, he wants a race to the bottom on fees. He still has fees because it doesn't work if you don't. So yeah, I'm very skeptical about anything that is free and or provides you with yield.
So speaking of fees, Ethereum is now earning about $2.7 billion a year in fees, which is more than 2x what Bitcoin's fees are every year. So, which is huge numbers. And what's kind of crazy to that is Ethereum's fees are now kind of the lowest they've been in years. So we talked about earlier about people wanting to invest in Ethereum into the ETF. This is maybe one of those reasons where Ethereum is getting a ton of use. Right. And I know there's a lot of people that don't believe that Ethereum is ever going to be a Bitcoin, which I don't think it's going to be a Bitcoin. It's going to be kind of a decentralized computer and an infrastructure play. So it's intriguing to see. It'd be one thing if the Ethereum fees were hundreds of dollars, which is what I've seen them in the past. But now it's cheaper to use Ethereum's network than it is Bitcoin's network these days.
Yeah, I haven't been keeping up with that because I don't really do much on Ethereum. But yeah, it seems super volatile as far as the fees are high or fees are low, and timing's everything when it comes to Ethereum stuff.
So I don't know if you saw what Jack Dorsey came out and said in his little thing that he was at last week. He came out and said that he thought Bitcoin could replace the US dollar, mainly because it was going to be a dominant permissionless currency in the future, and that he doesn't think it's going to happen in the next 10 years. But maybe 15, maybe a little bit longer. But that's kind of some strong words to say that the dollar could have at some point be replaced by the US, by Bitcoin.
I mean, I think it could be, but 15 years seems super quick based on what I saw in El Salvador. And, you know, like they've had 3 years and have very little adoption outside of like pockets. And so maybe there is like a tipping point where it goes, you know, a couple percent increase in adoption per year. And then you hit a certain point of critical mass, and then it goes 10, 20% year on year adoption, stuff like that. I don't know, right? Like we've never seen this, but you know, my fear would be that Jack Dorsey has been in the the tech world for his career, where things move fast. And this is like where the tech world meets sociology, which moves really slow. So I don't know. But I mean, if you look at it, man, nobody had an iPhone 15 years ago. Now everybody has one. So man, 15 years is kind of a long time when it comes to that sort of thing. But I don't know. And we'll see. That's kind of why you got to just jump on board. Like, it's going somewhere. It's going up. I just don't know if it's 15 years or 45 years.
Yeah, either way, it looks very positive long term. That's for sure. Yeah. MetaMask was in the news here recently, too. They bought WalletGuard, which is just another way for them to further improve the scam and drainer detection on your wallet. So MetaMask continues to be one of the non-custodian wallets that continues to innovate and add more features to their product. So that's awesome to see. Kraken also, I figured you might like this, they are looking into using nuclear power as a backup, being an exchange that needs to be available 24/7. They realize that the power system isn't always perfect, so they want to find other ways. I think they've looked at solar and wind and all kind of those options and have decided that nuclear is probably their best bet. So they're currently looking for companies to help them with bids on how that can be done, right? So they're not going to build any of their own nuclear power plants, but they want kind of those SMEs, the micro nuclear things. So
small modular reactors, SMR.
SMRs. Yeah. So they're really looking into that, and that's kind of great to hear. I mean, I think we've talked about nuclear being a good option in the future. It's just, unfortunately, oil and gas have so many hands and so many pockets and governments that it's hard to get rid of those anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, it's the right move. I would imagine that there is some nuclear plant out there that is in an area that's deindustrialized, so they've got excess power. You just have to find it. And then the beauty of Kraken is, all right, well, let's put all of our power-centric infrastructure stuff there with some people, but Kraken, is it fully decentralized? Like, they don't have an office. Is that Kraken? Is that right? Or do they have a headquarters?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know they're US based, but I'm not sure.
Some of them are like fully remote. Like, there is no headquarters. They have they just have one building so that they can register. It's not
decentralized.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to me, it's like, okay, well, we need stable power. We can build a server farm right next to this nuclear plant and have a five or six people just making sure that that thing is running, and everybody else just operates as normal, except for now we have stable power at super low cost. So yeah, that's definitely, I think it's smart.
So Coinbase was also in the news. The U.S. Marshals have picked Coinbase to custody the crypto that is seized by the DOJ. So which is great. It's just funny that the SEC is also suing Coinbase. There's a lot of disagreement within government agencies on who's doing good things and bad things at this point. So I just saw that and laughed.
Yeah, they're the most trustworthy large player in this market, yet they're not trustworthy enough to not catch a lawsuit and a Wells notice.
Yeah, exactly. And then Coinbase was also in the news, somewhat related. So they have their base network, which is a layer 2 on Ethereum. They had a huge project, friend.tech, at one point was a majority of the activity on Base, and friend.tech said that they were planning on moving off of Base to go start their own chain. Well, they have since changed that and they're going to stay on Base, which is, I think, good news for Base, but just kind of goes to show that starting your own chain probably isn't that easy when you have a very cheap, reliable chain that you can build on top of already. So it didn't help friend.tech's price. I think when they said that, everybody's like, you guys don't know what you're doing, and the price dropped by like 50%. But
yeah, I mean, at this point, do you really need a new token? Do you really need a new chain? Like, there's a lot out there. If you can't feel that, I think, what do we talk about? 500,000 new tokens on Solana. Like, 500,000 of one is okay. If you really want to, like, do it right and avoid all of the creating your own blockchain stuff. So, I don't know. I put it on the list of stuff that I don't have to worry about.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I wanted to give kind of an update on the zero knowledge stuff, the ZK things that are happening, because one of the benefits, I think, from ZK technology is helping to connect the different exchanges and changes or chains together. So ZKM and the Metis co-founder is working on launching a layer two called GOAT Network, and it will be in Q3 of this year. Bitcoin is what they're focused on first. So it will be the first fully decentralized Bitcoin layer two, is what they're saying. They're planning to use the technology from ZKM's entangled rollups, which the big reason for that is they don't need the third-party bridge. They help with that. And kind of what we talked about in the past is these third-party bridges are typically where the problems are, and that's where a lot of the hacks come from. So it's exciting to see. They expect after Bitcoin to move to or incorporate Ethereum, the Ton network, Cosmos, and some other ones shortly thereafter. So be intrigued to see how that goes. I love that concept. I think it's still years away before it really takes off, but it is at least printed.
I mean, I think this sounds complicated, and complicated things tend to have little failure points, but, you know, they get to try stuff, so try it.
Yeah, so there's another company called Pi Squared. They just raised $12.5 million to build a universal zero-knowledge circuit, and it's going to be powered by proof of proof. So we've talked about proof of work. We've talked about proof of stake. Now it'll be proof of proof. So, I mean, the ZK technology is pretty much based on proof. So you're not actually sharing the data. You're just sharing the proof and making sure that that's accurate. Now it's going to be this proof of proof concept, which I know nothing about, but it's interesting to see how this is going to play out too.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out.
And then Starknet, their Stuo, which STWO stands for Stark 2, is going to replace Stone, which is Stark 1. And sometime in 2025, what they've showed so far is that they're getting more than 1,000x better in hashes per second. So another ZK rollup technology, and it'll be interesting to see how they do. And then at the same time, ZK Sync, one of their competitors, is rebranding to Elastic Chain, which of course is not live in production yet, but it's a marketing thing at this point. And then Justin Sun, we talked about him earlier. He's also been in the news some more. He won his case against the Chinese media. The Chinese media came out and said he has been involved in insider trading, money laundering, and fraud. And they've been fighting this for the past 2 years, and it finally came out and they had to apologize. I don't know what's going to have to happen from all of this, but they said, yeah, they wrote an article that they almost made up for the most part. So he's done none of that. They're sorry, but it's one of those things where the hope is that maybe media can't just say whatever they want and get away with it, to be determined on what he actually gets out of this though.
Yeah. I mean, that we've seen, I feel like I've seen that a lot where it's like Elizabeth Warren gets the New York Times to write an article bad about crypto so that she can use it in hearings and things like that. So it sounds kind of like similar to that, where it's like, let's create a story so that we can run this guy out of town. And it's like, okay, well, it works great until you do that to somebody that fights back.
Yep. And then a couple other little crazy things that I saw. So Celsius, which is one of the failed lenders, they are trying to claw back about $100 million. So they're saying that if you withdrew any money from Celsius less than 90 days before they declare bankruptcy, they want to get some of that back because it's unfair for the creditors that still owed money. What's kind of crazy is they're basing it off of 2024 prices and not the 2022 prices. So, and prices were, what, 3-4x different at that point. So it is crazy this is happening. We're not really sure if they're going to get anything out of it, right? But it's amazing that someone could say, oh, because you took it out less than 90 days before bankruptcy, I want it back. That just makes no sense to me.
Come and get it. That's would be my response. Like, let's see what you got. Like,
and then we've talked about 3 Arrows Capital, which is now pretty much defunct, and probably one of the reasons why we had a lot of problems in the past. They just won a bid for an NFT for 20 ETH that they placed about 3 years ago, and nobody caught. So it finally went through. The guy that originally bought it paid like 100 ETH for it. So now 3 years capital paid 20 ETH for this NFT. It's kind of just funny. There's always something going on crazy in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, NFTs still catching a bid is kind of crazy in general right now.
And that's all that I had. Anything else that I missed from your end?
The one thing that we did talk about when we were talking about different countries, Bukele in El Salvador started to take on price escalation and inflation in his country. And so, you know, I talked a little bit about how my tour guide was like, yeah, he's kind of got this dictator feel and that he didn't really like it. And so I'm kind of like, you know what, I'm gonna keep an eye out for that. This sounds super dictatorial, like basically saying what we did with the gangs to get them out of the country, we can turn that on to retailers that are price gouging. And so I'm like, oh no, don't do that. Don't get into price fixing. Like, you want to do some things, fine, but like, you're under the threat of legal action or military action, you probably shouldn't tell grocery stores what their prices should be. So just keeping an eye on like the bad side of power and, you know, how corrupt it can make people. So we'll see where that goes. I mean, it's not like he's hanging people in the streets for selling eggs for $2.50, but it was a weird thing to say. And I listened to the kind of the press conferencey thing where he went through it, and yeah, not great. So we'll see how that goes. Still buying one Bitcoin a day every day, but you know, you got to keep an eye on stuff like that.
Cool. As always, great chatting with you. We'll talk again next week and see what's going on in the world of crypto.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jason.
See ya.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below. And hope to see you there.